you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. Very happy to have a full table of rowdy Australians with me today. There's a lot of us. This is perhaps the biggest Snapcast episode I've ever done. So we're just going to go around the table one at a time and let folks introduce themselves. First of all, the person who actually helped organize the entire event, Keith Hutchings. Keith will be a fly on the wall, but I wanted Keith to say a couple sentences real quick about himself and perhaps about the organization.
So I'm Keith Hutchings, and I am the founder of the Comfortable Home Project. And our mission is to change the way we build houses in Australia. And I'm accomplishing that task by working with a group of marketing students from various universities around me who are using the opportunity to get experience as filmmakers, marketers, and the to give themselves on the ground experience to connect with their what they're learning in the classroom.
Thank you, Keith. Next up is Zachary Reardon. Am I saying that correctly?
Yep, that's right, actually. Yeah.
Zach,
thanks
please.
To you. Not many Australians say it right, so thanks for that. I go by Zach, and I film and edit YouTube videos and social media videos for the Comfortable Home Project, and hopefully help out Dre with some SEO as well, because I've studied that a bit. But he's the main person on that kind of thing.
Very cool.
So thanks for having me.
Yes, glad you could be here. You mentioned Dre, so let's talk to Dre and Lex. Dre Warren, how are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. My name's Dre. I look at doing the website and I do some SEO and some copywriting and stuff for the Comfortable Home Project.
Thank you, Dre. And next up, Jessen. Jessen, how are you?
Hi. All good.
I was going to try to say your entire name, but I'm afraid I will destroy it.
It's Jason Stiawan. Just go with Jason.
And got it.
I'm the video content creator here in the Comfortable Home Project. I usually work with Ahmed and also taking video of Kit, talking with everybody that is our service provider that we feature in our videos.
Next up, Enza. Enza Ryan, how are you?
Hi. So my name's Christina Enza. I should have put that in Zoom, but I've been involved in the Comfortable Home Project for the longest, probably coming up to 5 years, unless I'm making that up.
Five years.
So I used to do all the videos, and then I took a step back as I kind of entered the film industry a bit more and had less time. So I kind of took over the internship facilitator role and tried to muddle my way through it. So yeah, thanks to these guys for working with me.
Excellent.
She's actually done an amazing job of stepping into that role of the project management and also the cat herding of me. So
it's very much cat herding. Yeah.
Well, it takes a very capable person.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you.
Last but not least at all is Ahmed. Ahmed, how's it going?
Hi, going good, not bad. My name is Ahmed Hashim. So I'm working as a marketing strategist and social media manager. So I'm the kind of person who creates, sort of strategies to get this thing outside. We all are working towards it. So there's nothing like one person do a task. It's all of us working together. We put forward all the ideas and then we take all the suggestions from everyone. So it makes our task a little more bit clear and it's a little more good.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, I've been looking forward to this conversation. I'm sorry I missed the last event where we tried to do this, but one thing I wanted to ask you for sure is, we're talking about the Comfortable Home Project. And the first time I hear those words, I'm thinking you guys must be getting out there with hammers and building homes, but that's not the case, is it? And in fact, testament to who's at the table. We've got video makers, we've got digital content strategists, we have, you know, program managers. None of you are construction folks. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, very much correct.
Yeah.
Can I just answer that one? So I realized that most of the people who are working in the end of the sector, which is energy efficient houses, are mostly small businesses, and they're mostly either not doing any marketing and working entirely on the word of mouth referral method, or what marketing they're doing is terrible. We've known how to build houses that were energy efficient since the 1970s. And most people don't know that they could have a house with no energy bills. So I've created this organization. We are a marketing agency without any paying clients, which is probably a sign of madness, but there you go. You know, if you want to change the world and there's already people who are doing it, it's just nobody knows they exist, then just let people know they exist. That's what we do.
So Christina, would you agree then that, you know, you're a marketing agency, you're basically trying to change the minds of people about how they build their houses? Is that a good summary?
Yeah, pretty much. So the main video, so we do focus on video, and we talk to service providers. So there's a very kind of tight knit but large industry in Perth. Like we only work in Perth really, or WA. And so we talk to service providers who do different services in the passive solar industry. And we also talk to people with passive solar homes, and we talk to them, and it's like, you know, why did you choose to go that extra step? Or why did you choose to kind of choose this niche product? Because people who have passive solar homes, they're obsessed with them. And so it's essentially just putting Keith in front of them and them, you know, saying on record how much they love it. So we can change people's minds little by little.
So individual testimonials is the way to go.
Yeah, pretty much. And showing people the kind of variety of services that are out there, because we've talked to so many different, you know, architects, different things, builders, and everyone has kind of a unique approach.
I definitely want to ping Ahmed about the actual overall building of the strategy, but let's talk to Zach real quick about the developing of the content. Is there a method to the madness? What does it mean to get out there with the camera and create the content? Are you looking for sound bites? Are you looking for just people to say things about solar, or what's on your agenda when you're at work?
Kind of all of the above. Of course, we try many different things, see how they go. So, but what usually happens is Keith knows someone that's a homeowner that has built a passive solar home, for instance, and then we set up a meeting with them, and we take some cameras and some lights, and we have an interview with them for a while, and then we can either cut down that interview into a very manageable, digestible piece of content, or we can, like you say, create sound bites, which are even more digestible, as you know. So there's a number of strategies there where we can have an hour-long piece of content maybe on one YouTube channel, or we can have a cut-down piece of content that, yeah, is really easy for people to look at and say, oh, this is pretty awesome. Or we can have a sound bite where we want to get across just like one message to people. Yeah.
So you do take the overall conversation and chop it up into bits. I was wondering if there was a guideline for any nonprofit that might be thinking about using video for their own purposes. How much footage does it generally take to get the story told? How much would you say?
I think Keith usually speaks with the homeowners for about half an hour or 45 minutes. And then you cut that down. If you can cut that down to less than 10 minutes, then it will be fast enough pace to get people, or to keep people interested.
Okay. And then of course, you know, with the ever shortening attention span, I'm sure you cut it down even further for other pieces. Right. So once you do that, do you just take all your video assets then and then hand them to Dre? Is that how it works, or?
So usually Dre just does the website. So sometimes we'll embed YouTube videos onto the website and that kind of thing. But either at the moment, me or Justin will do most of the video editing and then put that up on YouTube and consult Ahmed on whether to put that onto Facebook or other social media.
Got it. So again, I know we're going to come to Ahmed. Dre, what does your average day look like when, as a web person, you're in charge of doing SEO? What does that mean in terms of what you have to do, and what are you, what does the big picture look like for you? How are you taking a look at the horizon and deciding what's important right now?
Right now I'm mainly, I'm rewriting some of the content that's on the page to be more SEO friendly. So, optimizing the keywords that I can find some places, making sure that I'm using the correct keywords. That's the big thing that I had an issue with. That's what I've liked with working with Keith. I'm able to be kind of free with that. And, so for example, I changed the entire homepage to be more SEO friendly. Yeah, so just optimizing keywords, rewriting and doing some more copywriting using those keywords and ranking for the keywords that are most important. I guess that's what I try.
Is it hard to do? I mean, you know, we the SEO game is, I think, a mystery to a lot of people, but is it a simple question of length, like content? You know, I think the guideline is something like 600 words for a blog post or something like that, or does the actual vocabulary you use matter?
Yeah, it all matters. So, yeah, writing the post can sometimes be difficult, but it's mainly, going for the keywords, because without putting any paid efforts into it, it can be quite difficult to rank for the keywords that we look for. So I try and rank for more, longer keywords that are less competitive, but yeah, it is quite difficult. Like we were ranked first or second for passive solar experts. But once again, that wasn't one of the most searched terms, unfortunately. But yeah, but we did get up there, which was good. So that's mainly what I
understand. Jessen, you're a marketing undergrad and you're doing content creation. Does this mean you're working with Zach on the stuff that he does, or is your daily agenda different?
I guess me and Zach are working on usually with the different videos. Like Zach has more like a longer one video, or maybe it's just when I'm not available and Zach is, or just in vice versa. We're just usually not working on the same video. It's just me usually go with Ahmed and Kit, getting all like more smaller chunks video, like a shorter video where Kit has an interview with the service provider, and we kind of upload, like we post it on the Facebook Live so people doesn't have to really wait for the video to get be done on the editing and stuff, and people can just ask the questions they really want to ask about it to the service provider.
So you do a little more
like right away
in real time.
Yeah, it's more a real time one. Yeah, basically I'm just like the guy who's behind the camera all the time.
Got it. Understand. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the last person before we get to Ahmed is Grace. Grace, you got to turn on your microphone and tell us what it means to be a graphic designer for this organization. Is that what you have done? Am I reading this thing correctly? What do you do for the Comfortable Home Project?
Yeah, so I was the graphic designer and public relations coordinator.
PR coordinator. So what does your day look like with this organization? What's on your agenda?
I mean, the way that I started with the Comfortable Home Project versus now is very different. Working with Keith has actually gotten me a job, which I think is an interesting journey versus the other people that are probably getting experience to try and get a job afterwards. So I've kind of had to pull back. I'm working a 9-to-5 now, doing basically my dream job. But when I was helping quite a lot, we would have meetings all the time. We were talking about strategy, and I would just be taking like what I was reading in my in my university studies, and I had something that I could apply it to right now and have it like see the changes versus it all being hypothetical, which is what it was for everybody else at uni. So it was really helpful, and it looked really good on my resume.
Very cool. And at last, Ahmed, tell us about what it means to design a strategy. Are you the person who's drafted the strategy from the top down, or what was your starting point with all this, and where are you now?
I just started like 6 months back, so I'm with Comfortable Home Project since 6 months. My first day was like, I met Keith on a home show, and I was like, what is passive solar? Like, I don't even know what is that. So, and then he tried to explain me, he tried to show me so many things, and then, you know, it was a learning curve. And then even everything we do in the organization is also a learning curve. We went with a 1 hour live video without anyone to shortening it down, and then, you know, seeing some improvements in the live sessions or whatever it is. So it's all this, you know, you test it out and then you find it, and then you talk to people, and then you realize what is going to work for you, what's not going to work, and then we put all the idea on the table with all the people in the organization, and then we discuss about it, and then we finally have a strategy. As in, like, we all are into marketing, so at a point of time, strategy becomes a part of it. So for example, if we need to create a strategy for creating a video or a blog post, we need to coordinate with Jason or Zach. When we put it on the website, we need to talk to Dre. It goes on, so we are all interrelated. I mean, one task itself is all running between so many people. So it's interesting. And as Grace said earlier, ever since I've joined, I've learned a lot of things with Keith and other members. So yeah, that's pretty much what's going on.
So
yeah.
Let's spend a little bit more time about strategy, especially for a marketing effort. What would you say are the, and we don't have to dwell on this too hard, but very quickly, what would you say are like the critical components of a marketing strategy? What should a nonprofit be looking at as they develop their own strategies?
The first thing before learning about anything, what I told Keith is, since we are nonprofit, it's better not to spend any money on marketing. So the biggest challenge here is to create organic reach. And also when people hear about the word sustainable and things, they just don't care about all those things. They just don't look at it. So I'm not talking about everyone. There are people who look at it. But like I said, the first day I joined, I didn't know what was passive solar. And then when we go to different houses who has already built passive solar design, and then, you know, on a cold day, we enter from outside, and when you close the door, and then you find that warm feeling inside, that actually gives us the idea of, you know, what we are trying to, you know, tell people. Like, so everything is an experience, and we try to put that experience in our content, and then try for an organic reach.
I'm going to put a word in your mouth here, so forgive me for this, but I think what you're talking about is figuring out how to tell the story.
Yeah, so basically we educate people regarding the passive solar design. So as Keith mentioned before, it's some sort of idea which was developed in 1970s or 80s, that period. And due to some reason, the marketing didn't go well that time. And then, so we are just trying to bring it out to people again now.
Yeah. If I could jump in with the strategy question, something with, especially Justin was talking about Facebook Lives, and that kind of came about as a, I guess, design solution to the fact that we are a nonprofit. So nonprofit management, like Ahmed said, you know, you don't have any money and you also don't have much time. So our content has kind of changed over the years to kind of get the most for what time we have. And it's been really cool having a lot of people working on it now, because we can, you know, like Ahmed said, we can have that interconnectedness and use everyone's specialties, but it is time consuming. And so, you know, having Facebook Lives where you don't need to edit them afterwards, that's been really good. So that would be my one piece of strategy from me. I'm not the expert like Ahmed is, but that's something I found over the last 6 months with everyone involved.
Are the results measurable?
I would say yes, because once you put out a content, we get to see all the data that is there, right? Like, what time do they see it? What are the age group who is viewing it? And as I mentioned earlier, it's all a learning curve that we went through. After 1 or 2 weeks, we like, okay, it's better to do a live during this time because people are free during this time. And, you know, during office hours, morning at 8 a.m., no one is going to look at some Facebook Lives. They're all busy with their office works, first hour, two right. hours. Yeah, so it's all that learning curve that we came through as a team. So everything plays an important factor. I mean, if it is a live, what's the best time to go? If it's a post, what's the best time to go? Where do you target? And the biggest challenge, I would say, with social media right now is, and also with the SEO and everything, is everyone is trying to reach on the top. So it becomes really difficult. I mean, there is paid options, which is available, which we don't actually agree on going towards. So when you have an option of paid SEO, I mean, whatever it is, when you get listed up on top, I don't think anyone nowadays go to, you search anything on Google and you never go to the page two. You just find something on the page one and then you click it from right. and then you take it out. So it's basically everyone is racing to be on the page one, and with every possible keywords, with every possible thing. So so the biggest challenge is we try to do it organic. And it's all a learning curve. We are still in that curve. So
sure. I imagine it's a constant experimental set of variables. Some things work and some things don't. So you change and you try it again.
I just throw something in here. One of the things, you know, none of the people that are here are getting paid. I'm not making any money from this project either. So we are doing it for the learning, as Grace mentioned, to get that experience to go from the classroom, the theoretical. And part of, we've all made mistakes along the way. And I just laugh every time somebody makes a mistake, including myself. We have a video that we recorded and I accidentally deleted the sound for it. So that was the most recent one. And what I keep saying to the, you know, to the young people is that my goal here is that they make every possible mistake that can be made in the marketing industry while working for me for no money, so that when they go out into, you know, to paid work, their bosses say, I just don't understand it. He never makes a mistake. Right. Yes, because they've made them all already. So that's a part of the learning curve, is that we try things and do they work? You know, we, as Ahmed mentioned, we did a Facebook Live where somebody gave a talk. It was almost an hour and a half. We had 27 people watching it. Mm. Which to my mind was huge. That was great. 27 people learned a whole lot about passive solar designed houses. And I think for a moment, Grace was going to jump in and say something. So we don't want to lose her sage thoughts. Grace, did you have something to add?
Even just with that, I think what we're teaching as well is a bit of an odd thing, because any one of those 27 people that decide not to build a regular house is such a win for us. That's, you know, all of this money going into something sustainable, and the house is going to, it's going to stay there, you know. So it's not like we need so many conversions. If we really get, you know, one or two people to build a passive solar house, we've already made a difference.
Right.
So,
right. I get it.
Yeah.
It's a, and so it is something of a, I mean, there's certainly a passionate component to the work you all do.
Yeah, definitely.
So, of course.
Everybody's like nodding around the table. That's right. So let's talk about mistakes really quickly. I just want to pick on a couple of you real quick. Zach and Jessen, as content creators, people behind the camera, what have been your major learnings? What are some of the mistakes you've made and things that you're going to take away from this experience?
I'll just go back. I haven't been around for too long. So I've really only done a few videos. But I'll go back to one of them where I just didn't really have the time to edit it down into like a short form, like, you know, 7-minute video. So it kind of stayed in half an hour thing, and well, we didn't really perform that well. So even with like some editing, I knew that, you know, it wasn't necessarily going to perform the best. And yeah, true enough, you know, if you don't put in the work and make it digestible, like I was saying before, then sometimes it, yeah, just doesn't work.
Yep, that makes sense. Jessen, what would you say?
I would say there was a lot of technical mistakes in the beginning, like small stuff actually. It's just like forgetting to push the record button or something. Like I kind of actually don't know where I put my video in my storage and stuff. Those kind of stuff are like never really occurred to me as a student or like as a video content creator before, because right. Like there's a lot of video that we shot and it's just like it's just everywhere, and I guess me and Keith are always like looking for the file that we store, and it's just like it's not in his computer, it's not in my laptop, and then we just started to make like progress, like making a procedure, like every time after we shot a video, we just straight away put it in a hard disk, or maybe just always to make sure that all the stuff are recorded. Yeah, those kind of stuff are like a very small stuff that actually really affects the content creation process.
Little things.
Yep.
Little things make a big difference. Yep. I'll tell you guys a story, which I may edit this out in our final edit here, but I do this other podcast called The Thing About Cars. And just like you described, I forgot to hit record at the top of the episode. And I had maybe 7 people around the table at the time. We were, you know, a couple of mechanics, some car aficionados. We had this great conversation. It was rip roaring good time. Tons of people were laughing. And then I looked down and I realized that the tape counter still said 0. And I'm like, oh my God, we just lost the entire episode. And everyone at the table looked at me like I was, you know, the biggest doofus in the world. But the really funny part and what was kind of spooky to me was when I looked at them and said, okay, I'm hitting record now. Let's take this from the top again. And we had almost the same conversation, almost word for word from scratch all over again. It was uncanny. So thankfully we didn't lose the conversation, but my goodness, what a scary experience that was.
And for video, I don't know if the audience, you know, knows what goes into making videos, because it's not just, you know, setting up your phone and pressing record, although that is not to discredit that form of video at all. But we have multiple cameras, we've got multiple lapel mics, we've got lights, we've got tripods, you know, we've got lots of moving parts. So you forget one thing, or you forget to test one microphone, and then the whole video could get, you know, spun out of whack. So like, you know, when Jessen's talking about like, oh, we lost a file, it's so easy to do just because there's so many kind of things that you have to juggle to have that, you know, finished video where it looks like you put no effort into it. That's the magic of it.
And in addition, like not only like that we just press record and stuff, we actually kind of become the director. off Kip, because usually Kip is just
multiple takes.
Yeah.
He just talks.
Yeah.
It keeps talking.
I always have a note that all the talking points that Kit has to talk about, or maybe just using like a small whiteboard just to give him like notes or like any marks about it. Yeah, while in the video,
we don't need. Yeah, I haven't used any here, but in some of my other audio productions, we have hand signals. So you know, this means I can't hear you. This means you're talking too long, make it shorter. So my audience can obviously not see any of these gestures, but there's, you know, a little bit of sign language involved in communicating these things to people who are speaking. A couple more questions and then we'll wrap the episode. How many of you have gotten full-time paying jobs after this experience, or how many of you think that your networking effort, your means of being able to look for the next jobs have been facilitated by this experience?
Me, definitely. So I started when I was in high school. And so I don't know how many videos I've made through the Comfortable Home Project, but it would be maybe 50 at this point. So my portfolio is massive. And now I've had a paying stable job, making almost the exact same videos, same kind of interview style videos. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in that industry. So it's not full-time contract, so I can't fully say like, oh, I've got a full-time job through Keith, but I may as well have, you know. And and that's the thing Keith kind of advocates for you. That's why this has been pretty cool. And I know Grace can say the same thing.
Grace, at the beginning, she said that she had landed her dream job. Isn't that right, Grace?
Yeah. So, without the experience that I had from working with the Comfortable Home Project, I definitely wouldn't have gotten this job. Even applying for it, I was like, I'm a recent graduate. I literally haven't graduated yet with my ceremony. I've just finished my units. I'm way out of my depth, but I applied for it anyway. And especially with Keith, again, advocating for me, you know, having someone be able to talk about my skills and especially my personality, you know, always showing up, always, that's the stuff that matters. And also my job's in the not-for-profit space as well, so I had experience working there, and I also knew that that's what I wanted to do, because I'd had corporate jobs and I'd had not-for-profit jobs, and I knew which one that I preferred.
Yep. And that's a whole nother conversation as to what the actual difference is between the corporate world and the nonprofit world.
Mickey, could I just add something in there? Sure. Christina, she just went off and got her own job. She didn't even ask me for a reference, which I was, but
they
Grace,
just didn't call you.
Grace, I actually, you know, returned the call on the reference, and I think it's part of the job of somebody who's working with young people is to move them into that role. And I think by the time I got off the phone with the woman that was interviewing me for Grace, I think she was ready to quit her job and give it to Grace, because I just gave her such a glowing reference that, you know, she didn't know whether she was actually any longer qualified to do the job.
Are you sure?
Grace's boss.
You know I love you, but are you sure it was just her saying, if I could get this guy to stop talking, I'll just give her the job?
I think that was probably it, if we're really going to get down to it.
And so, something off the back of that is the soft skills that I mm-hmm. guess, like especially, you know, with Jess and talking about the directing, being able, Keith has always said, like, Christina, if you've been able to boss around an old white man, you can boss around anyone. So, you know, like just directing and dealing with, because these are builders that we're talking about, you know, like they're lovely, but they can be quite intimidating, especially for students who don't know anything about passive solar, you know, and having to go to a shoot and boss them around and you go after that, like you're just ready for the professional world, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and that's another place that I've really tried to work with these young guys, these people, is moving them above their pay grade, which is easy because it's zero, but say, okay, you're not just a videographer, you're a director here. tell me what to do, tell me where to go. And when Christina started showing some interest in the cat herding part of the job, I said, you're going to be in management soon, so why don't you interview the next group of young people that are coming in, and then you decide whether, because the stakes are really low. Because I would go to an interview with person and I would say, oh, you want to work with us? Oh, you have a heartbeat? Yes, you can work with us. So Christina being a bit of a filter is a win and gives her that experience. So I think in working with young people in a not-for-profit, it's really part of our job and is to give them
the opportunity. I have very high standards, which is how I found Ahmed and Jessen, you know.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes, yes. I mean, but I like to, you know, to Keith's point, it's good to have this sort of a safe environment to make your mistakes without a huge amount of, I'm struggling over which word to use. It's a safe environment to learn, to make your mistakes. There's not as much writing on the idea that you may or may not make a mistake. It doesn't sound like a very high stress endeavor, right? Like if you fail to do your thing, there's nobody at the end of your equation who's not going to eat for a week or anything like that.
Yeah, I actually broke the website 2 weeks ago and I got a really calm message from Keith. Hey, Dre, the website's not working. Could you check that out? It's like, oh, okay, I can do that. And yeah, sure enough, I fixed it within 10 minutes. But yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, in my 9-to-5 paid job, I also broke the website. But it was for 5 minutes. And my coworker told me very quickly, but that was high stakes. And if I hadn't have fixed it, I would have been in trouble.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm glad you caught it. So last question, and I pose this to everyone at the table who wants to chime in on this one. Would you recommend this experience for other students? Do you think the nonprofit angle is more or less valuable than anything else a student in your position might do? What do you think? Let's start with Ahmed.
I think as a student, working with a nonprofit gives you, as I mentioned earlier, the ability or the skills or the soft skills to generate, I mean, in marketing, to generate something organic. Yeah. So anybody could, you know, pay and get on the first page or get so many views or get sponsored videos. You could do that. Anybody could do that if you have enough money. But the actual skill lies where you try to create an organic reach. Especially when you work as a team, everyone gets to know like what are the small factors. Like we all sit together or we discuss over WhatsApp or we sit in a meeting and discuss. Initially we had videos like which runs for like 25 minutes, 40 minutes. And the views were on views on that were less. And then we had a discussion with Keith. Initially I had a discussion with Keith and then we put it on the next meeting. To everyone, and then that's how we came to an idea of reducing the time, because no one is ever going to listen to any passage or a story for 25 to 40 minutes. Like so you need, that's how when I mean, yeah, certain small things that you learn with nonprofit organizations will actually help you during your studies and as well as after that when you go for a job. So I think, yeah, and if with your previous question, you were asking like, has anyone landed on any jobs? I haven't, but so many calls from different organizations. I went for interview. Some of them I passed, and some of them I didn't. The really, really one interview which I really felt bad was the one which they actually liked me. They liked the work which I did. They are okay with my CV and everything. They called me for an interview and they looked at my skills. And finally, they rejected me only for the reason that I was not working as a paid job. And then I felt like, okay, I mean, if they are going to do that, I mean, I'm not willing to work in such an organization. I mean, skills is more important than money. So It's better I get rejected in the first place.
Oh yeah, and it's very unwise. I would think anybody who says that unpaid experience is not worth it. I mean, there's, you know, there are the six of us, seven of us around the table, eight of us around the table, but there's a conversation here in the States as to whether or not internships should be paid. And it's an ongoing debate. You know, there's no right or wrong answer to that question. But I think that if you're doing the work, as Grace said, if you're building your portfolio and you're showing that you're learning from your mistakes, I think that that's just as valuable as paid work. That's just my opinion though. So Zach, Jessen, one more time, I would ask the same question of you. Would you recommend this organization or other similar nonprofit organizations to other students? What would your advice to those students be?
So I would recommend the Comfortable Home Project. I would recommend any organization that gives you practical experience and trust in you, like Keith does, or at least trust in you to try something. And if you fail, then that's not the end of the world. Because I've had a few other internships through uni before, and it was more social media planning and doing plans for things. And then I haven't got the practical experience that actually gets you the job. Yeah, so I think that's the main thing, is getting that practical experience, and also making some mistakes so that you can learn from it and you can be confident when you're trying to apply for another job that, I can do what they're trying to make me do, or do what they say on the job listing.
Yep. Jessen, what about you? What would you say to another student in your position?
Yeah, I would say I really recommend the Comfortable Home Project for other students, and also for working with Keith. Besides like having a experience for the skills that I will need for later on, but also working for a nonprofit is like, it's trying to better, like trying to improve, not for yourself, but for the community and for some sense for the environment. And that's what like really worth your effort, rather than just like, for maybe if you're talking about getting a paid job, it's just, I guess, for bettering yourself. And this working for a nonprofit also like bettering like the people surrounding that surrounds you, I guess.
Just adding on to that, I know I'm talking too much. It's just one more point, is that for any person, for any employee, it's important to, with their work, it's important to work under a good manager. And I think working with Keith is, it gives you that that ability to view. He actually allows us to build it ourselves, and then if you want to actually build your skills, you need to work under a good manager who can guide you. So I think in that case, he does an excellent job in just like what Dre said, the message.
Well, thanks, you guys. I get it. And Keith, I was just about to snarkily ask how much you paid these people to say these things before we get started, but you've all done a really remarkable job. It sounds like that you've really flourished in this environment and are carrying the mission forward. Let me ask two or three folks here for just a parting word of advice. Dre, I would sort of the same question. What would you say to the student in your position? What would you do differently if you woke up tomorrow and found out this organization no longer existed?
If I woke up and I found out this no longer existed, I'd call up Keith and make sure he's okay, because this is his baby. So definitely check up on him. But no, I've gotten a lot out of this experience, and I think any other student in my position definitely would too. Just the ability to just trial and error things out, just building these skills that I haven't been able to build previously. I think, I've been really enjoying it anyway. And I think anyone in my position would, I know these guys do as well. Even with like the small team meetings and when we meet up in person and do some of the shoots as well, I've been there for those. They can be quite entertaining. Made Keith dance. I've been trying to get him to do a video where we make him wear like 20 t-shirts, 30 t-shirts. We can be really creative with it, and that's what I like.
It's definitely happening. Yeah. It's just we ran out of time before my travels, but yeah, no.
I very much want to see this. Definitely. If this happens, please send me an email because I want to see this.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it's going to be big. Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely going to know about it. Like, it's going to go viral. So.
Keith, this is a wonderful model, and I think you're obviously doing some really amazing work, both with and for the people that work with you. What would your parting words of advice be to our nonprofit audience? Any words of encouragement, any management things that they should keep an eye on as they go about their jobs, doing the marketing for their entities?
Mickey, just a closing thought I think that's really important is for your listeners to know where I have found this group of young people that I'm working with and that I'm so enjoying working with. So most of them have come from a local university to me, which is Curtin University. There are several others that are also working that are from other universities. So the Curtin students I found through meeting someone who runs the Curtin Marketing Association Facebook group. The others I have met at networking events that I've gone to where they're emerging marketers and more experienced marketers and just talk to them. I think people need to understand that they will get knocked back a lot of the times. The students will say, oh, you want me to work for free? Yeah, nah. But I'll just keep asking. And the other thing is to be aware of is that what I'm learning from students is actually finding a place to get an internship can be quite difficult. It seems that a lot of organizations are no longer offering internships partially because of this message that you need to pay people. And there's a lot of, kind of administrative difficulties and things like that. But I feel that the value both that I'm giving to the young people and the value that we as an organization are getting far exceeds any kind of complications. And just the last thing is that organizations have to be aware that there's going to be a high turnover of people. The young people are going to come and they're going to work for them for, 6 months or something. And then they're going to move on. And that's as it should be. And they should be moving on to paid work. And, as I mentioned earlier, part of your deal with them, spoken or unspoken, is to facilitate them moving on to paid work. But that turnover can be difficult, especially because I really grow to like them, and you will too. So I just think those are two things are really important for your listeners to hear. So, yeah, thanks for the chance to pass them along.
That's true. That is very, very true. Culture is everything. You guys, I must thank you all. I know that it's painful for you to do this 12 hours time difference for me, but I must thank you all for being my guest on the Nonprofit Snapcast today. And if there's any occasion to do this again, please just ring me up and let's make it happen.
All right. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.